The Kogan Musical Hour, where we are at After Hours with me, producer Rogue Coleman, Adam Phillips making a guest engineering appearance. I'll talk to him a little later. We're on today till about, I don't know, 10:20 or 10:30 when the Bears will lose. And Mr. Obradovich and Mr. Hampton and Mr. Carmen will come in here and tell you why they lost. It has been one of my favorite Christmas time traditions for many years now to commune with my friend, the my favorite priest, always will be and ever has been, Father John Cusick, formerly of Old St. Pat's, but as he's explained to me many times over the last few years, a priest doesn't really retire. You're like a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. Once a priest, always a priest. John, how are you?
Hey, Rick. Good evening. I'm well. How are you?
Is this one of your favorite Christmas traditions, too, to spend an hour talking to me?
Yeah, I always enjoy it. You know, I wish I was in studio tonight because to sit across those tables from you is always a joy, and we can chat. But it just didn't work out this time.
No,
so you found me.
That's fine. I tracked you down. I tracked you down.
You found me on the north side of the cheese curtain.
You have been writing some wonderful, you know, your Facebook page, the John Cusick Facebook page, is sort of where you started the foundation of your rather extraordinary book that was published this year, Never Be Ordinary, Wisdom from My Father. You started writing on Facebook. You're doing the same thing this year with these Christmas reflections, John. I'm terribly moved by them. Have you done this every year and I just missed it?
No, I've taken it, Rick, a lot more seriously. I retired in 2014, and I found one of the values of Facebook is that it's a new pulpit for me. It's a new way of communicating with people, and I enjoy doing the writing, though I must admit it's taken me a long time to get comfortable. You're a writer. I'm not. But I enjoy the comments that people make on those reflections.
Yeah,
they're profound.
Well, but I'm also telling you, you elicit those comments. I'm going to read the first one started on Wednesday, December 18th. You're going to end on Christmas Day. You write that all of these memories in one way or another are rooted in the story of the birth of Jesus. All of them but one are my personal experiences. Here's what's really telling here. Many of them would just be rather ordinary human experiences, but because of the Christmas event, they are far from ordinary and reveal a profound awareness of the depth of human life. And it also, you say, they reveal the spirituality of the season. Could you expand on that, John? What exactly is, to you, the spirituality of the season?
Well, you know, I think we got to talk, Rick, a little bit that in every human being, you know, yourself, myself, everybody, there's a body and there's a spirit. Something inside of us makes us laugh. Sometimes we stare into the blank universe and no one knows where in the name of God we're at.
Yeah.
There's a depth to us which we don't like to acknowledge at times, but it's there. I mean, I wrote today about the Christmas truce of 1914.
Yeah.
When a bunch of soldiers, not politicians, not diplomats, a bunch of soldiers in a couple darn trenches.
Yep.
Had the guts of coming out of a trench, and with no arm, no weapons, and sang Christmas carols. The same carols that all four or five of those fighting forces, they all knew them.
Yeah.
And they realized, God, we've got more in common than killing each other.
Well, and you do it in your writing. You do it in German. I cannot pronounce a silent night, holy night, all is
night.
All is bright. Can you do it? Stille Nacht?
Yeah. Heilige Nacht. I took German for a while. I'm no good at it, but
But the story, what's great about the story, John, is it is true. That's the other
right
thing. It's fact. It has been recorded in history.
Right.
And it is, boy, if you're looking for a kind of peaceful story in this really screwy world, that is the one. Now I know that more people they are drawn to church and in some cases synagogue for Hanukkah and other places. Do they go there, John, because in most cases, because it is something they think they ought to be doing, or are they going, and this is a new theory of mine, are they going to try to retouch that sort of hidden spirituality?
There's almost every rationale in the world for it. You know, I'm not going to try to presume I know why, but I think, I mean, I had the 11:15 mass today at Old St. Patrick's Church. And Rick, they were lined up along the walls. You couldn't get in the building, you know. And I think that there is a spirituality in us. I think we don't like to deal with it a lot of times. You know, we live in a very, very secular world, and we don't like to, you know, to push religion here and there. But you know, even without religion, there's spirituality.
Yeah.
There's a spiritual core to us. And, I mean, I can see it in your writing. You know, you get beneath the skin of things.
Huh.
And there's an awful lot there. You know, I look at Blair Kamen. Here's a guy writing about buildings.
But when
you see what Blair is writing, there's a spirit to life that he sees in a building that I can't see. I'm not sure you can see, but he sees it, and it's real. You know?
What do you? Let me ask you a question, John, because that's what I like to do. Is part of it the modern world has just gotten so, I think, icy that we are further removed from whatever is that innate spirituality. You know, you can't be very spiritual on Twitter, I don't think. You can be mean and discordant and nasty.
Yeah.
But do you think that's part of it, too? And most people work in jobs where they don't communicate with other people. Many of them sit in front of computers. Many of them make a lot of money sitting in front of computers. We live in a world where less and less are people making things. They're making money.
I would like to know how often, and I'd love to ask this as a question, how often people during the week have a good conversation with another human being.
Rarely.
I mean, everything is pithy, short, pithy, 20 words here, 40, you know, things there. But do we ever have good conversation? That's the spirituality of life,
yeah.
You know?
Agree, but also, you know, that may be what you provide and your religious colleagues provide, is rarely does anybody sit for a long period of time. You know, think about people, maybe there are some great, interesting spiritual voices on the radio, but you're clicking here, you're clicking there, you're tasting one thing for 2 minutes and something else. But when you go to church and listen to John Cusack, and I know you have a lot of respect for your colleagues in this, talk. It's like such a rarity. Where do people talk or listen?
No, they don't.
Yeah.
Right.
We got to take a short break, John. You're going to be on the whole hour. I can't wait to make me more spiritual. We'll be.
It's far better listening to you than watching the Bears, believe me.
Oh, I watched the first half. That's one of the reasons I walked in the studio and the all-star from the Latin school Romans, talking to Ed Obradovich and Dan Hampton about football and, you know, sharing my opinion with them. I didn't feel loath to do that. Oh, my God. First half, 60 yards of offense. We'll be back momentarily with Father John Cusack. Be hearing throughout this abbreviated after hour show some Christmas music courtesy of the Lakeside Singers, a group of professional singers from the jazz classical world who get together as the Lakeside Singers to brighten the holidays. I am on the telephone, as I will be until 10 o'clock, with Father John Cusick, formerly. I don't know. I remember when you retired, and I'm going, what does that mean, John? What does that mean, retiring? You've hardly retired. You gave a sermon this morning. It's hard to pull yourself totally out of it. Do you know many priests who have retired and just said, okay, that's it, I'm going to play golf for the rest of my life?
No.
I didn't think so.
I think the problem is not a problem.
Yeah,
it's a blessing for me that we know so many people over the years.
Yeah.
One of the people that I knew before I think I ever got connected to even you, Steve Quast, who did some work for GN and did some work for the Cubs.
Sure.
And he passed away the other day, and Ellen, his wife, called me and said, could you do Steve's funeral? And of course I said, I'd be honored to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll hop on the train. I'll come into Chicago. I can't say no. Yeah, you know, I have to say no to certain things.
Sure.
But these are the people that have been my life for 50 years.
Yeah.
So, you know.
One of the things that has always kind of amazed me about you, I mean, you were understanding of many of life's punches and life's pleasures. But your ability to confront, because I know, John, when people get sick in this town, who are and have been your friends and or parishioners, you are there for them. And it is not, you aren't struck by any kind of sadness because you believe in an afterlife, of course. But what enables you to get through that? Because I think at this time of year, I was thinking about all the people that have vanished, I think, over the last decade. And I found myself not being struck with a sense of sadness, but being struck with all these wonderful memories of their lives.
Yeah.
Is that part of what keeps you so sane and reasonable and level-headed?
Well, it does, because they're good people. Rick, I've said about myself that I've been spoiled. I have met and continue to meet some of the most wonderful people in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know people who are cheating here and doing goofy things and a variety of things and closing their eyes and making up stories and all that kind of nonsense. I just meet wonderful people. And some of them are not, I mean, I've met some wonderful people who have gone to jail because nobody's perfect.
Sure.
But I believe in the goodness, the absolute goodness of a human being. I believe that. I had lunch one day with a guy who spent 14 of the last 17 years on death row. And I couldn't figure out why he was so nice to me, because when he came out of prison and they put a camera in his face, what he had to say wasn't pretty. And as we got up to leave, he said, Father, thank you for your time. You know, when I was a kid, I was an altar boy in church. I'm thinking, oh, my God. So he had a respect for me as a public person.
Yeah.
And yeah. I saw something in him which wasn't a part of death row.
Mm. He out? Had he been released? Had he been freed? Had he been wrongly convicted?
He's back in now. But it was one of the George Ryan people that... He was not only let off a death row, but he was one of three people who was totally exonerated because of some shenanigans with the with the police.
Shenanigans is the right word. No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding.
But he was, you know, he was a great guy, but he got out and he went crazy. He hadn't tasted freedom in 17 years.
Mm.
Yeah. And now he's back in again. So, but I saw in him a radical goodness, as I try to see in everybody. It's hard sometimes.
Oh, I'm sure it's hard.
You know,
let me ask you, John, because it probably does happen over the holidays. I think, you know, people fall away from their, you know, maybe their youthful organized religion, and they don't get waylaid. They just go on living a life without religion being a part of it. Have you encountered some people of those people who said, you know, I really think I should go to church. It's my mother loved. And what is that reawakening like for them?
I think they are beginning to sense a shallowness sometimes in their own life.
Yep.
They've been successful. You know, I mean, I know some people as you do that could buy and sell the Tribune. You know,
I wish one would buy it now. Yeah, that's a
yeah,
good.
I know.
We'll talk next week. Yeah,
I read Mary Schmidt's column, but they're looking for a sense, I think, of integrity that you can't buy.
Yeah,
you know. For some people, I've run into, as you would certainly expect, who have their life has been out of control by alcohol and chemical abuse, and they've gotten sober and clean. And they are some of the most magnificent people in the world. They've known how to get up from the bottom of the world and stand tall and keep their head high. And what have they discovered it in? You can't be sober without a higher power.
Yeah.
There's something greater than yourself.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way, why one of the reasons AA works so successfully for all these years. It is not strictly God-based, but it certainly is a higher power kind of based. Does this, I want to ask you after we get some news at the bottom of the hour, what are you doing on Christmas? What do you do on Christmas?
Well, I got the 9:30 Mass at St. Pat's on Christmas. I used to do midnight Mass every year, but then I had to start taking a nap. Because I couldn't stay up till midnight.
And one of the things I'll tell you, it's not a secret because John is not loath to share it. When John gives a sermon or a talk at church, he does not write these things out before, which I still find as a professional writer an astonishing ability, John. Where does that come from? I mean, do you understand the magic involved in being able to do something like that?
Yeah, you know, I think I've gotten lucky, I've been blessed, whatever you want, other language you want to call. I mean, like today, I did not have I was struggling, and I did not have a good idea 20 minutes before I had to get
it up amazes me. Yeah.
And then you got to get up and you got to weave something together for about 12 minutes.
In front of a church that is filled to the rafters, standing room only.
Right.
You don't get intimidated, but you have, I guess you have faith that something will come to you, right?
Well, I see it, Rick, as a conversation. You know, people say that, you know, the greatest fear is not the fear of flying, it's the fear of public speaking.
Yeah.
But we all speak publicly. You know, if I'm talking to you, you're talking to me, whether, you know, we're on WGN or whether you and I are out having a drink or, you know, grabbing a sandwich. If you say something to me in public, that's public speaking.
Yes.
And if I say something, so I sort of look at it as conversational. You know, I don't have to have a text in front of me to talk to Rick Kogan.
Yeah.
Because we just talk to one another. So when I get up, I just talk. I've got, you know, God's given me the ability to actually make some sense out of what I'm saying.
No question. No question.
And the funny thing is, I can feel two parts of my brain. This is what's bizarre. The front part of my head is talking, and the back part of my head is thinking. Because I'm doing this with no notes.
Yeah, and, I know.
But then once in a while, I hear myself say something, and I say, file that. So it goes in the back of my head and comes back later on in the talk.
In the file cabinet, and John Cusick said, we got to take a break, John, for some commercials, because they pay the freight here. But Father John Cusick will be back on the air momentarily, and we're going to explore. I have to read, if it's okay with you. John is posting on his Facebook page, John Cusick, a number of Christmas memories. One of them is just, they're all good. One is kind of astonishing, and I want to read to you. I don't know if this came from the front of his brain or the back of his brain, but it came from a hell of a brain. We'll be right back. That again is some Christmas music from Lakeside Singers. I'm on the phone. North of the border is Father John Cusick. He retired from Old St. Pat's in 2014. He has written a remarkable book Just you can't get it for Christmas, I think, unless you're Amazon Prime extra special person. But get it for the new year. Never Be Ordinary, Wisdom from My Father by John Cusack. It is in honor of his father, George Cusack. John is currently filing memories on his Facebook page, John Cusack. And you're right, John, and again, thanks for coming on. You're right that the comments are just what you're doing is... You're inspiring people to their own memories. Do you know what I mean? I think that's part of it.
Absolutely. And what are they getting in touch with, their spirit?
Absolutely. Here is one from 1970. I'm going to read a bit of this. You have told me this story before, maybe over a beverage or two, but it's a remarkable story. John writes, getting a Christmas present for my dad should have been very easy. A six-pack of Schlitz and a bottle of Hiram Walker bourbon, wrapped or unwrapped, and he would be very happy. My mom would not have approved. Mom was different. She liked a lot of Christmas-wrapped gifts, and so did I. My goal each Christmas was to shower them with wrapped gifts. Christmas 1970 was different. I was ordained a priest in May of that year, and I told my folks that I'd be getting home no earlier than 2 or 3 o'clock. The last Christmas mass ended about 1, and the drive home was about an hour. That year, there was only one gift for them. Could you tell the rest of that story, Father Cusack?
Well, it was colorfully wrapped in a tie box. My mom, who was the inquisitive one of the two, had a detective look on her face. After kissing and hugging my parents when I arrived, I asked them to sit on the sofa. I handed them the tie box and asked them to open it. I was so excited. The contents inside the tie box were wrapped in tissue paper. On the top of the paper, I wrote a letter for my parents. 49 years later, I cannot remember the exact words of my letter, but I will never forget the spirit. It went something like this. Dear Dad and Mom, Merry Christmas. For the past 6 years, and maybe even longer, you have cut back many things in your own lives so that I could pursue my dreams that led to my ordination earlier this year. You didn't take a summer vacation for many years, which I knew you always enjoyed. I became aware that you were denying yourselves many things, especially during those 5 years when I volunteered at Angel Guardian Orphanage. You paid all my bills. I am forever in your debt. Inside this little box is the most special Christmas gift I could ever give you. I will meet you at the Miami airport. The next day, we will fly to Nassau. I will stay with you for 2 nights, and after that, you're on your own. I hope you will enjoy some time away and time together. Enjoy a winter vacation. Thank you for everything you have done for me. All my love, your John. Opening the tissue paper were airline tickets and hotel vouchers for Miami and Nassau. My dad cried for only the second time in my life, both times in 1970. Do you think you know what the first time was?
I think so, I do.
So did my mom and so did their son. I was so happy. There was no greater gift. As it turned out, it was my dad's last Christmas. He died 9 months later. They saw a young child with Mary, his mother, and they presented him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold, frankincense, myrrh, airplane tickets, hotel vouchers were extra special. They came from our hearts. Priceless. Merry Christmas.
That is a hell of a story, John Cusack, even though you have told it to me before. Does it make you cry?
It doesn't make me cry anymore, but some days pretty darn close.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It was one of those spiritually sacred moments.
Yeah. Were you at all, knowing your parents and, a hardworking dad and a loving mom, not used to that kind of extravagance, were you at all worried when you put together such a gift for them? Were you ever worried that they'd go, oh, Johnny, this is too much, we don't want to do this?
My dad would. Yeah. He's always complaining. Here, I'd take him out to a real nice dinner. Oh, God, John, this is the place for people on expense accounts. I said, Dad, for God's sake, let me wine you and dine you. You know, but he didn't that day. He just accepted it.
Well,
he cried.
Well, he obviously sensed with that letter the significance of it for you. You know, the one thing I've never asked you, did you guys have a good time down there? Your 2 days and their five more days?
Yeah, well, the one full day I was with him, I'll never forget it. We were driving around, and we parked the car, and we walked out on this pier. And my dad is casing the Caribbean Sea. And he looks at me and he says, John, the only thing you need around here is a pair of shorts. You know, it just hit me. I could just see my dad, you know, with a Schlitz front end.
Right.
Roaming around the Bahamas in a pair of shorts. You know, it was what he thought life could be. And I laughed on the inside, and I still laugh when I can see him still on the darn pier.
Yeah. See, well, that's one of the things that I'm sort of imbued with this holiday season is this notion of memories being really thick for me. I mean, I was thinking about some people who died this year. There's a full page in and I did it partly because of work. I asked my colleagues in the arts and entertainment section to tell me something they particularly, just a few, not because each one of them could have named dozens, if not hundreds, something they really missed, a profound sense of loss. And as everybody from Blair Kamen to Steve Johnson to Michael Phillips gave me these short little takes about these things, I didn't feel the sense of loss. I felt wonderful. I was bathed in the memories of these people, and I sense that's exactly the way you feel when you talk about your mom and dad.
Oh, yeah, I do. You know, and I think there's a time, Rick, in some of our lives, not necessarily everybody's, when parents age, they become more heroic than they are parents. You know, they rise. I mean, my mother, dear God, I'm trying to put a little book together on lessons I've learned from my mother.
Oh,
and,
how wonderful. Great.
It would be very different. But she lived to be 97 and a half, and a year to the day before she died, we're having a cheeseburger in Maui.
Yeah. Something your dad would not have been able to get his head around, I'm sure.
Oh, no, he would even have complained about going to Hawaii. The flight's too damn long. He'd be happy sitting on his bar stool on 79th Street in the south side of Chicago.
Yep.
And, but then again, they used to take a summer vacation every year. They drove.
Where would they go?
Oh, we went to Washington a couple, 3 years. We went to Santa Fe, New Mexico. We drove around, and I love to drive, and I think I got that from my dad. And one of the great stories, we were going east, and he drove. I wasn't even able to drive yet. I was younger, and he saw this sign, Pennsylvania Dutch beer.
And he, you've got to go there.
Yeah, and he said, I think it's 20 miles. We're going to stop. And so we stop, and I go to the bathroom, and they bring him his Pennsylvania Dutch beer, and it's root beer. The joint was dry. And he was looking for a good old American beer, and he got a glass of root beer. The man was broken in spirit. It was an amazing thing to see.
Well, there's a sense of something I didn't realize about your folks is the sense of real adventure. I mean, many people of our era there, it was like, well, the Wisconsin Dells. We went to the Dells. We went to the Dells again, and we went to the Dells again, and we went to maybe, we took a real leap and went to Lake Geneva. Yeah, that's an adventure. Well, he imbued you with that spirit. I'm so glad to hear you're writing a book about your mom.
But so did my mom.
Yeah.
My mother, I used to ask her every fall, we would go out for dinner, and after Dad died, and I'd say, do you want to go someplace this winter? And, of course, she always said yes. She had a great sense of adventure.
Smart.
So when she was 88, I said, well, where do you want to go this year? She said, let's go someplace we've never been. I'm thinking, God, we've been everywhere. You know, I'm thinking, well, the only place we haven't been is South Texas. I says, well, where do you want to go? She said, Australia.
Oh, my God.
I said, Australia? Yeah, let's go to Australia. So I called my travel agent, and I said, Betty, I know the flight time to L.A. is about four and a half hours. I said, what's the flight time from Los Angeles to Sydney? She said, 13 and a half hours. So I said, I added it all up. I said, Mom, we're going to be in an airplane 17 and a half hours and a four-hour layover in Los Angeles. She said, so what? I just sit around the house all day anyhow.
Oh, I love your mom, John. I love your mom. You told her each way, too. That's fantastic.
Yeah, She didn't care. Yeah,
we got to take one more little break, John. Then I want to come back and read a little more of your writing on Facebook, where your writing is getting, it's from the front of your brain and the back of your brain. We'll be right back. That is the last you will hear of the Lakeside Singers, I think, because the Bears game will end soon, and Mr. Obradovich and Mr. Hampton and Mr. Carmen will be in here to give you their unique take on the game. I have a few more minutes left with my great friend and a person I admire beyond words, John Cusick. Formerly a priest at Old St. Pat's, but if you go to Old St. Pat's, you probably see him there at least once a week. You are there frequently, John. Are you going to be there Christmas Day? John?
I'll be there.
Oh, you
yes,
will?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm going to read.
9:30 Mass.
All right, try to get there. If you want to see John Cusick at 9:30 Mass, he will come up with his sermon about 10 after 9, and somehow we'll pull it off. Somehow we'll pull it off, and it will be brilliant. Another interesting, and again, ladies and gentlemen, go online. Man, I don't have to do it now, but a really nice way to start the year would be with a book called Never Be Ordinary, Wisdom from My Father by John Cusick in honor of his father, George. And I can't wait for the thing. Just the one story about your mom wanting to go to Australia is priceless.
At the age of 88.
At the age of 88. What are you, 17 hours? Oh, I just sit at home. John has been doing a series of sort of short memoirs and memories on his Facebook page, which is John Cusick, Cusick. He writes this in one of them. He's doing them all the way up until Christmas Day, and then he'll move on to some other kind of writing. In 1955, when I was a bright, promising, and curious 10-year-old young man, I found my Christmas gifts under my parents' bed. I was so excited with my discovery. They weren't wrapped yet. I could see each gift that I would unwrap on Christmas morning. I was very careful not to disturb any of the gifts. I made sure they remained just the way I found them. I did not want my parents to know about my hunt and discovery. However, I could never have imagined my reaction on Christmas morning. All the gifts were under the Christmas tree. I could tell my mom wrapped each one. They were perfectly wrapped. As I unwrapped my first gift, there was a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. There was no surprise coming forth for me. Let me be more accurate. There were no real surprises. I had to fake it. I learned a big lesson. You can't fake surprise. Oh, I had my God-given big smile, and I expressed the best surprised look that I could. But that feeling in the pit of my stomach, so clearly to me on Christmas morning in 1955, you can't fake surprise. You write after that, the next sentence is, surprise is a gift in itself. That lesson has stayed with you through your whole life.
Oh, yeah.
When you give Christmas presents now, do you give Christmas presents?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Never.
And they are well thought out.
Yeah.
Based upon the person.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy somebody a toaster.
What if they like toast? What if they really like toast, though?
Get your own toaster. I want to give people something that speaks to me about who they are in my life.
and the relationship that's, you have with them. Yeah, yeah.
That's very, very important to me. I was at a little Christmas gathering with, I have a goddaughter, a Chinese American goddaughter, and she's very, very bright in seventh grade. And she admires gifted women. And she admires Michelle Obama. And Mrs. Obama has a book out based upon
her life.
But she's got another one now that is almost like a how to write a diary, how to write a reflection.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I gave that to Sheila as my gift because I know she's got a real depth to her and she reads. I took her to Disney World, and in her backpack, she brought six books.
Oh, my God.
But she's got a depth to her, and she saw this book, and she just lit up.
Ugh.
And I sat in the chair across the room tonight and said, I did it. I got the right gift.
Wow.
It spoke to her ability to be reflective on her own life, and she's in seventh grade, you know.
But it also spoke to your understanding of another person who is, you know, decades younger than you, but you...
Well, I try.
Well,
I
no, really but try. I think the best of us, the best among us, do try to do that. And back to the beginning of this conversation about the art and necessity of conversation, that it is
right.
It is essential. It is essential to listen in church. Do you find, John, that many people return to religion? Again, it's at this time of year where religion, in addition to commerce, is all over the place, that later in life they will, you know, come back after decades away for the warmth and the comfort that they might recall from childhood?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a good chance some will. Some will come occasionally. You know, some will come more regularly. But I do think you can find some comfort in it.
Yeah.
All I want to do, Rick, is I don't know why people walk through a door on a Sunday morning. All I know is I want to give them the best Catholic experience that I can do. And I've learned that from my father. You know, I'm paraphrasing my dad. He would say, don't mail it in. You know?
Yeah.
Give it your best. And I can't do anything but that.
Yeah. Well, that makes you, that makes you pretty remarkable. I mean, you have spent your entire life in a sense, exploring other people and how they interact with you and your faith and your spirituality. And you have a gift. Father Cusick. And if it worked on me, it would work on anybody, for God's sake.
Well, so the only what I'd like to tell people for this Christmas is two things.
Okay.
If you're a part of the Christian story, if the birth narrative of this Jesus found in the Gospel of Luke and then found in the Gospel of Matthew, if it says, yeah, I'm Christian, I buy that stuff. Mm-hmm. My two questions are, as you look upon a Christmas crash, or you read these things, or hear them, what does it say to you at Christmas 2019? What does it say to you about who you are? Never mind who God is. What mm-hmm. does it say about who you are?
Yeah.
And I think that's the depth question. Because of this story, what does it say you are? And I think that's key. And that's why I'm fascinated by it each and every year.
Yeah.
It never grows old.
Well, it really never does get tired for you. You began as an altar server at Little Flower Parish. And
right.
That many, many, many years ago, and that has stayed with you. And I have to assume, John, that even every time you walk in a church, whether it's Old St. Pat's or someplace you're doing a wedding in San Diego or something, I don't know, or in Honolulu or Australia, that you are touched by the Spirit, yes?
Yeah, you know, I think sacred structures are more evocative of the Spirit of us getting loose, you know, than there's a different spirit in Wrigley Field than there is in the cathedral. You know, they're both good spirits, yeah. But they're different.
That's right, but different spirits. But the neighborhood around Wrigley has changed too much. It robs me of that spirit.
Oh, I know, and it's big money. I mean, used to go out with my dad and sit in left field, and they'd be betting on every pitch.
Oh, sure, And they'd open the gates after the sixth inning and say, come on in. Nobody's coming to see the games.
Come on in. And a few adult beverages later, the spirit was even better. You know, so it was. And by the way, something was going on that grass down there.
Yeah, that's right. You know? John Cusick, Merry Christmas to you, pal.
Merry Christmas, Rick.
Thanks always. I don't know what I'd do. Well, if I don't have a radio show, we'll just go out and it could be even more interesting. We'll go out and share a couple adult beverages and even more conversation. But, John, to all those, I know you love a lot of people, and to them, too. Love to all of them.
And to your wonderful Fiona.
Thank
you. Have a blessed Christmas with Daddy Rick. That'd be great.
She shouldn't call me Daddy Rick anymore. She's 15. Thank you, John. Thank you.
Okay,
pal.
God bless.
You too. You too. That is really one of a kind. Adam Phillips and I have just been sitting here nodding at what he says and what he does. Again, his book is Never Be Ordinary Wisdom from My Father, but more to the point, go on his Facebook page, John Cusick, Cusick. And read his memories of Christmas. He's been posting them over the last few days and will do so through Christmas Day. We'll see if I'm coming on. We'll see what the deal is. The Bears game is almost over, and we'll get some news and then see what those remarkable guys have to say.